أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين بارئ الخلائق أجمعين والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ونبينا وطبيب نفوسنا وشفيع ذنوبنا أبي القاسم محمد اللهم صل على ثم الصلاة والسلام على آل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المظلومين ولعنة الله على أعدائهم أجمعين من يوم عداوتهم إلى يوم الدين أما بعد فقد قال الله تبارك وتعالى في كتابه بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم إن الذين اتقوا إذا مسهم طائف من الشيطان تذكروا فإذا هم مبصرون صلوات على محمد وعلى آله We continue with our discussion on the root cause of negative suffering. What we have said so far is that the human mind is a tool, and by its very nature, it is in the habit of producing an incessant stream of thoughts. When you completely identify with these thoughts, you might believe you are the voice in your head and that you are doing the thinking. You do not do thinking. Thinking happens. Just like it wouldn't be correct to say I am circulating the blood in my body. I don't circulate the blood in my body. It circulates. Similarly, you wouldn't say I am digesting or I am breathing. You could say I am breathing, but you are not doing the breathing. It's happening. In the same way, you might think I am thinking, but you are not really thinking. The mind is thinking. It is producing a constant chatter. When you have something of value, the mind is focused and it executes that particular task very well. But when there isn't anything of particular importance happening, it continues to produce an incessant chatter of thoughts. And so most human beings are what we call possessed, or their true identity has become hijacked by this mind, which is pretending to be the real person. And as we explained the last time, the mind over the ages creates a fictitious and false identity that we call the ego. And this ego then is what most people think is who they are. The sense of I-ness that they have and that identity with the thought in the mind. Now, this false identity or I, it depends on, first of all, its separateness to exist. Even though it does not have a reality, as long as it can sustain and maintain this idea that I am separate from everything else, and there is no connection between me and anything else, it continues to exist. In order for this conceptual I to exist, there has to be a conceptual other. An other is most other when they are an enemy. In other words, when I can see others as being wrong and seeing myself as being right, when I see myself as being superior and others as being inferior, the more wrong the others are and the more right I am, the more separate I am from everything else. And therefore the ego needs others to be separate and wrong in order for it to be right. And because of this, it uses various forms of negative suffering that it thinks are techniques or methods of survival to keep itself going. And tonight we want to talk about some of these methods. These methods include finding fault in others, complaining, criticizing, the compulsive need to argue, resentment, holding a grievance in the heart, which is a long-term resentment against others, reacting to everything emotionally. These are all the different methods that the ego will use to stay alive. Now, before I go into this, And it doesn't stop at just complaining and this. At a higher level, it gets to physical violence, abusing other people, screaming, shouting, war. The war between human beings often is caused by this. Fighting an imaginary war in the mind, fighting against other nations, a war against terror that is all in your head only. These are all different forms of the ego playing out itself to hold itself superior to others. But in order for you to understand this, let us clarify one more point. And I'll give you an example that you might be able to relate to. I have a 10-month-old girl at home. Sometimes I want her to sleep, so I'll put her in her room in the bed. But she doesn't want to sleep. So she will cry and cry and cry. I will pull her out and say to her, obviously she doesn't have a clue what I'm saying, you can stay out provided you behave yourself. If you misbehave, you're going back in the room. And obviously she misbehaves. And when I get fed up, I put her back in the room and she cries again. And I pull her out again and I'm reasoning with her and say, if you misbehave, you're going back in the room. And she misbehaves again. As an adult, it doesn't make sense to me. Why doesn't she get it? She's being punished because she's misbehaving. There is a direct link. But as an infant, she doesn't see the relationship at all. She cannot understand that misbehaving has anything to do with me being punished or being put in my room. The ego is like a little child. Behind the ego sits the real human being, that silent awareness that watches the mind as it plays games. That real human being can see a relationship between negative suffering and the unhappiness it creates for itself. But the ego cannot see that. In other words, when the ego is using criticism, blaming, sarcasm, emotional blackmail, resentment, hurting other people's feelings, arguing, it actually thinks it is solving a problem. It cannot see the relationship that these techniques are the very reasons that I am unhappy. This is what is making me unhappy. And that is why when you identify with the mind completely and you believe it to be you, you will continue using these methods to try and find happiness. Because you think you are the mind and the mind thinks this is causing happiness. But when the awareness behind the thought sits and watches, it will give up these methods. Because it realizes that this is the cause of the unhappiness. It sees a relationship between that criticism and blaming and complaining and resentment with the sense of dissatisfaction with life and the unhappiness it is creating for itself and for everything around it. So if you keep this in mind, then we proceed, inshallah. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. One method that the ego will use is finding fault in others. Finding fault in others might be nicknaming people, which the Quran condemns. لا تنابزوا بالألقاب. Do not give people ألقاب. Those of us who have any relationship to Zanzibar, we know this is very part and parcel of our lives. There is no one who comes from there who does not have a nickname. The Quran condemns this. This is an ego's method of creating that separateness for itself. And you will see in a minute why it gives it a sense of superiority. Then finding faults can be name-calling, abusing someone, shouting at someone. It might be just a four-letter word. It might be just calling someone a fool or an idiot or a jerk or whatever. And the ego develops an auto-repair mechanism. You see, to the ego, for it to survive, it must be separate and it must be superior. The moment it encounters anything that makes it feel diminished, it auto-repairs. You're driving and somebody shouts at you and calls you a fool. Immediately you shout back. That is the ego repairing itself because you are unconscious. So what the ego is thinking is when it was abused, it got diminished. It felt inferior. Now, the inferior means death to the ego. So in order to feel superior again, it shouts back. And that makes it thinks it is becoming better. But in fact, it is just trying to auto-repair, but in the process creating more unhappiness. The other form that it will use is complaining. Complaining is the ego's favorite way of strengthening itself. Every complaint becomes a little story that is then maintained in the mind, and it keeps running like a movie again and again, that we call me and my story. And when you identify with the mind, you completely believe in that story. You believe that to be absolutely true. Complaining is not the same as informing someone that their behavior is unacceptable. Complaining is not the same as stating a fact. Otherwise, we would not have been able to do Amr bil Ma'ruf and Nahi anil Munkar. So there is nothing wrong with telling someone without introducing the ego. What is the difference between that? Okay. If the program director comes to the microphone and says, please do not walk on the grass, that is not a complaint. But if he was to say, how many times do I have to tell you? Do you not listen to me? Don't walk on the grass. That is a complaint. Why? First of all, it is said with emotion, and we shall see later on the role of emotion. Secondly, there is that little me that has come in. How many times do I have to tell you? Do you not listen to me? So that little me comes in. Now that is not in the service of change, that is in the service of the ego. Even though it may be true, don't walk on the grass. So if you say, waiter, this soup is cold, can you please warm it? That's not a complaint. But if you say, how dare you serve me cold soup? Me. Now there is a little me that wants to be offended by cold soup and is going to make the most of it. That is the difference between complaining versus not complaining. So the next time you are complaining about anything, bring that awareness. Take a deep breath, the normal process that we talk about. Watch the mind and then ask yourself, who is complaining? Is it that wise, silent, sage-like awareness and consciousness that sits behind the mind that is watching, that is complaining? No. It is that little me, that ego, that petty little me that is constantly chattering. That's the one that's complaining. And the moment you catch it red-handed, it dissolves. That is a moment of enlightenment. And every time you catch it, as I said yesterday, you have not failed, you have succeeded. Because that is how you eventually get rid of it. So this is one thing to keep in mind. The other thing is resentment. Resentment is that feeling of wanting to be offended and feeling hurt because of what somebody said or somebody didn't say or somebody did or somebody didn't do. Or the way somebody looked at me or somebody didn't look at me or and so on and so forth. Sometimes we want to be offended or feel bitter about somebody's greed or somebody's dishonesty or somebody's lack of integrity. And that is perhaps because there is a bit of that in ourselves. So when we see it in others, it brings out something that we hate in ourselves, but we project it on them. Because the ego does not want to blame itself. And at other times, the fault may be there. It may be true that somebody has done something wrong to you. But by focusing on it excessively, you amplify it. You make a story out of it. For example, yesterday I was coming to the mosque and so-and-so pushed me. And he didn't even have the decency to apologize. I think he did it on purpose. And I hold that in resentment. Then for the next 5 years I don't talk to him. Now it may be true that he pushed me. And it may also be true that he did it on purpose. And it may also be true that he did not have the decency to apologize. But by amplifying it and making it a story and holding it, now I will not forgive this person in the Jamaat or World Federation or Madrasa or family or I won't talk to them now. Khalas. And I hold that resentment. What is that? That is the ego. It needs a story. And we shall talk about roles tomorrow, inshallah. It needs to see itself as a victim and keep that story going to feed it so that its sense of separateness continues to exist. The best way that you can dissolve this resentment in another person is by not reacting to it. When you react to the person who is expressing hatred or resentment to you, you feed their ego, and then your ego kicks in and becomes alive as well. But when somebody is kicking a fuss or creating a scene, if you stay present and if you stay aware and you don't hold any resentment even inside your heart, because even if you're quiet but you hold hatred and you're thinking nasty thoughts about the other person, you are feeding his ego at a subliminal level. There is a negative energy flowing back and forth. But if you can stay without any inner resentment on your part, then his or her ego will realize there's no food here. I can't feed on this person's ego. It'll go look for it somewhere else. So you don't need to do much sometimes. All you need to do is stay present. It may be someone at home. It may be your spouse. It may be your child. They might say something hurtful. They might say something to criticize. You know, what's wrong with you? Why are you like this? Or why do you look like something the cat dragged in? Or whatever it may be, right? Don't think. Just stay present, stay calm, stay focused. Because the person who is criticizing is not the real human being. The person who is criticizing is the illusion, the ego that has possessed the person and hijacked him and is temporarily pretending to be that person. So non-reaction sometimes will help you dissolve the other person's ego. Now, non-reaction is not the same as non-action. This is very important. Non-reaction, when you don't react, it's not the same as you don't act. Non-reaction means you act, but you act with consciousness. So there is nothing wrong with telling a person to stop how they're behaving, or to tell them that their behavior is unacceptable, provided you do it as a fact, without making it a personal, emotional reaction. So non-reaction is not that if my spouse bashes me on the head with a frying pan, I just stand still and I smile. Oh, I'm enlightened. I don't react. That is not non-reaction. Now, this is very important that you need to understand this. Non-reaction is that you act but with consciousness. Even if you are in jihad, you don't react. You act. Now, there isn't enough time to go into details, but the famous incident that we talk about between Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam and Amr ibn Abdawud, salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. And when Amr ibn Abdawud, you know, shows disrespect to the Imam and spits and the Imam pulls away, just think about that whole incident. What is that about? It is basically non-reaction. That I will not kill him as a reaction, as an emotional reaction. So you can even perform jihad without being reactive. And then there are other incidents. Throughout the history of our imams, you will see that whenever they were confronted with somebody who was negative, they did not react. They stayed present, they stayed aware, they separated fact from opinion, and then they used action with consciousness. The man who comes from Syria to Imam Hassan alayhi salam and he starts abusing him. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. And he starts telling, because he's come from Muawiyah. You are this and you are this and you are that and you are that. Typical human reaction is, who do you think you are? Do you know who I am? I am the grandson of the Prophet. How dare you speak to me like this? But there is no ego there. He's quiet. He's totally in control. And then he speaks. Brother, you seem to be from out of town. Are you hungry? Can I give you some food? Do you have a place to stay? Can I take you home? He dissolves the other person's ego. He falls at the Imam's feet. The same with the incident that you see with Imam Al-Baqir alayhi salam, when a man comes to abuse him. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. He abuses him and abuses him and abuses him and even abuses the Imam's mother. Who will tolerate that your mother should be abused? Huh? If somebody, you abuse my mother, I'll kill you. The Imam, Ma'asum, min aslab al-tahira, who dares to abuse the Imam? And the fifth Imam's mother is the daughter of Imam Hassan as well. Because his grandfather on both sides are Imams. When the man is done, what does he say to him? See, there is no reaction, there is action. There's only fact, there's no opinion. He says, brother, if what you say is true, may Allah forgive me. And if what you say is not true, may Allah forgive you. And the man falls at his feet, his ego is dissolved. It is from the Ahlul Bayt that we learn what it means to forgive. We think forgiving, sometimes we hold a resentment against somebody, and you might have a resentment against someone in this room. This is an opportunity to think about this. We hold a resentment for so long, and we say we won't forgive. And then, in a moment of an emotion, we say, I'll forgive him. You know, maybe Allah will give me Jannah in exchange. Have we really forgiven? No. The next time something happens with that person, it will come out again. It is just dormant. Forgiving does not mean to overlook the person's mistake. Forgiving means to look through and realize that the person who did the wrong to me was not the person. It was the ego of the person. The person was unconscious. The real awareness behind the ego is a very nice person. Is a very loving, kind person. It is the mind-projected illusion, the ego, that thinks it needs to be critical or to be cruel in order to survive, that is the one that did harm to me. And when you realize that the essence of the person is good, it is just that he is unconscious, he is at a lower level of spirituality, then you know the true meaning of forgiving. Then you don't hold a grudge against the other person, because you realize it's not personal. You don't overlook now, you look through. And that is the meaning of forgiveness. If you can recite a salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. The other form of negativity that the mind will use, or the ego will use to survive, is reactivity. There are people who are hypersensitive, and they are on the edge. They are waiting to react. They want you to say something or do something so that they can pounce on you. You might have met people like this. I have. So, and I'll give you an example. And they are waiting for something so they can say, this is an outrage. How dare you? They want the telemarketer to call so that they can just, that's what they want. Or they want to go to a store and return something, and the cashier or the person there should hold an argument with them, and then you've made their day. Because this is what exactly their ego wants. They want to feed on that. About 2 weeks ago or so, I was in a building, I went to pick something up, and I went up the elevator, and I was coming down, and as I went into the elevator, there was a couple there with a beautiful four-year-old girl. I'm guessing about 3-4 year old. And as we went down the elevator, it stopped on a floor, and another lady got in with her son, and her son was about the same age as the little girl. And they stood there. And I saw firsthand what it means when a person is of the nature that reacts. The elevator stopped again at another floor, and the lady who had her son, who came in last, was exiting. And as she was exiting, perhaps the little boy thought the little girl was very pretty, and she was. He held her hand. And the mother of the girl now is reacting. She snatches the boy's hand and pushes it. And then as the mother walks out with her son, she starts a volley of abuse. Woman, what's wrong with your son? Keep him on a leash. This, that, that. And it goes on and on and on. Something as simple as that, but waiting to react. And then as the elevator door closes, she's going on and on. And she turns to her husband. What was he doing? Did he put his hand on her neck? Was he like strangling her? Was he? And she was going on. And the husband as well was as surprised as I was. He was like, no, he was just holding her hand. Oh, geez, I tell you, nothing, nowhere is safe nowadays. You can't be safe anywhere. There's no... Subhanallah. This is first-hand experience 2 weeks ago in Brampton, myself, eyewitness. And as I got off the elevator and walked out, she was still going on and on about how some parents need to keep their children on a leash and how it's just not safe nowadays. So there are people like this. And when you recognize that this is the ego playing itself out, you see drama and you realize why for centuries and for centuries human beings have lived in conflict and war and hatred and resentment and not forgiving each other for a lifetime. Is it the real human being or is it just the ego? So don't try to let go of resentment or to try to forgive. There isn't anything to do. It's just awareness. As soon as you become aware that it is the ego and it isn't you, it dissolves. And you learn the meaning of forgiving and you learn the meaning of giving up resentment. And you free yourself from that. And that way you are a step closer to awakening, inshallah. If you can recite the salawat ala Muhammad. Now, let us talk about the compulsive need to argue all the time and the need to feel superior and dominate others through an argument. When we complain or we criticize or we find fault in others, not only does it increase our sense of separateness from the other, but it also gives us a feeling of superiority. How does that work? You might be complaining about the weather. You might be complaining about the traffic jam. You might be complaining about politicians. You might be complaining about these lazy people who are unemployed, enjoying our tax money, or about the seniors who are just sitting back, enjoying our money. Or you might complain about the children nowadays and the way they're being raised, or about the parents who are raising these children, or the jamaat, the way it's being run, or the madrasa, or somebody at home, or just complaining. How does that make you feel superior? When you complain or criticize, by implication, you are right and the other person is wrong. And therefore, in an unspoken way, it gives you a sense of moral superiority over the other person, that I am better than that person. It may be a situation. You might be complaining about the traffic or the weather, but it gives you a sense of superiority because it puts you in a position of moral right and the other person is being in the moral wrong. So in order for you to be right, obviously somebody else has to be wrong. And the more wrong the other person is, the more right you are and the better the story your mind has to play out. When the truth is stated as a fact, then it is in the service of the truth. But when it is stated only to prove I am right and you are wrong, then even if it is the truth, it is not for the truth, it is for the ego. I give you an example now. You see, the Christian thinks he is right. The Catholic thinks he is right. The Jehovah's Witness thinks he is right. The Jew thinks he is right, the Hindu thinks he is right, the Muslim thinks he is right. Amongst the Muslims, the Wahhabi thinks he is right, the Sunni thinks he is right, the Shia thinks he is right. Amongst the Shia, the Usuli thinks he is right, the Akhbari thinks he is right. Amongst the Usuli, the one who follows Sayyid Khuy thinks he is right, because he started fasting a day earlier. The one who's following Ayatollah Sistani thinks he is right, because he started fasting a day later. The one who believes in Walayat al-Faqih thinks he is right. The one who is against it thinks he is right. Who is right? It's a puzzle now, right? Everybody is sure he is right and he is going to Jannah. If everybody puts his ego aside and we only sit back with that awareness that is the real me and we look at the fact without personalizing it, then no two people will disagree. Because that is the fact. Unless you are insane, you will not deny it. But the moment it is mixed with personal opinion and ego, then the truth of the matter, my dear brothers and sisters, is that nobody is right. It doesn't matter if one of them is arguing and he happens to have the right fact in his hands. But the fact that the argument is for the sake of the ego, then none of them is right. And typically, this will go from verbal abuse, shouting, name-calling, to even physical violence. Even amongst Muslims and Muslims. If you have to call a fellow Muslim a kafir, or if you have to chop his head off to prove you are right, then surely that cannot be the truth. Because the truth that you believe in does not have any fact. It has such a paucity of facts that you have to cut somebody's head off to prove that you are right. If it was true, you would not have to resort to that. And that is why I say to even fellow Christians at work, if you are a Jehovah Witness and you come knocking on my door with your Bible in your hand, if you are not willing to listen to my side of the story as well, and if you're not as open to allowing me to convert you as you want to convert me, then you really don't want the truth. You only want to satisfy your ego. Because if you really wanted the truth, you would want as much to learn as you want to teach. You would be open to the truth. But why is it that you only want to tell me, you don't want to listen? Because it is your ego that wants to be satisfied. It is not the truth that you wish to share. This doesn't mean that facts don't exist. Facts do exist. Let's take an example. If I say, light travels faster than sound, that's a fact. Now, if you disagree with me, it doesn't matter because it's the fact. I am right, you are wrong. It can be proven very, very easily by simply observing that lightning happens before thunder. And that proves the point. Now, if I say light travels faster than sound, that is in the service of truth. But if I say, believe me, trust me, why do you never believe what I say? I am telling you, light travels faster than sound. Now it may be true, but now it's not in the service of truth. Now it's in the service of the ego, because the little me has come in. Now it's about trust me, believe me. Why do you not believe me? I am telling you. It's not about the light traveling. So in the same way, if I state a fact and say, Shias do not believe the Quran is incomplete, that's a fact. I don't have to argue about it now. I don't have to personalize it. If I have to say and argue, believe me, why do you not believe? We do not worship our imams. Now it is not in the service of the truth. Now it is just about ego. I want to be right so that my ego is not diminished. And so we stop here and we ask ourselves, what are the kind of things that we argue about at home? And what are the kind of things that we argue about in the mosque? We argue about azadari, we argue about tabut, about alam, about lash, about niyaz, about what language the majlis should be in. So far we don't argue about who should recite because there's always a shortage. But we argue about, you know, we argue about everything. Timing, what time should the program be held, should this be happen, should sufra happen, should this happen. And not across, I'm not talking about this center or Toronto. Look across our centers, across the world, the Middle East, Africa, India, Pakistan. Look at the things that we argue about as a community. And then what are the things we argue about with fellow Muslims who are not Shias? Tawassul, Shafa'at, Imamat. Who was right? Did the Prophet appoint Imam Ali as his successor? What are the things we argue about with Christians? What are the things we argue about with anybody? Each one of these things has a fact. And the fact can be stated in impersonal terms as a truth. And anyone who sits back and observes with awareness will see the truth. But when the ego is trying to decipher what is the truth, then it does not have the ability to distinguish personal opinions and what will satisfy its ego from the actual truth and the fact. Because to the ego, it's not about knowing the truth, it's about self-preservation. That's what it wants. So when you stand up for truth, do not be worried whether others agree with you or disagree with you. It doesn't really matter. What are you defending? Are you defending the truth? Really? Let me tell you something. The truth doesn't care. Do you think light or sound cares what people believe, who is faster or who is not? If all of us got together and said and started chanting 100 times, sound is faster than light, sound is fast, do you think light cares or sound cares? It doesn't. Because the truth is what it is. In the same way, Allah doesn't care who believes He exists or He doesn't exist. The truth is He exists. Nothing can come into existence without Him. If anything is there, do you believe this exists? Do you believe this exists? Do you believe this? Anything that exists, it exists because there is something that allows it to come into existence. Whatever you believe that to be. Go back to the Big Bang theory, go back to any theory you want. There is something that allows everything that you see to exist. That which allows things to exist is Allah. That's a fact. But from Allah's perspective, as a truth, it doesn't matter who agrees, who supports, who fights. Why are you killing each other to support something that does not need your support? And in the same way, Imam Hussein alayhi salam doesn't care. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. He doesn't care either. Who does matam, who doesn't do matam, who cries for him, who doesn't cry for him, who goes for his ziyarah, who doesn't go. He represents a truth. Recognize the truth, stand with the truth. That is all. Bring about this awareness that there is an ego in me and that whenever it is diminished, it wants to feel superior and it will search for any method to prove itself, even if it means going against the truth, just so that it does not feel a sense of inferiority. The stronger the sense of inferiority complex in a person, the more they will argue and the more they will see the need to fight in an argument and win the argument, because to the ego, losing an argument is the same as dying. It is death. So it cannot afford to lose an argument. It has to win an argument. And that is why the Quran says that those who are with true knowledge, those who are pious, they distinguish when a person asks a question or argues, whether should I get into this argument or not. And when they see that this argument is not worth it, إِذَا خَاطَبَهُمُ الْجَاهِلُونَ قَالُوا سَلَامًا. They just say salam and they walk. This is a state of enlightenment. So it would be accurate to say then, that it is not we who are defending the truth, but it is the illusion within us that is seeing the need to defend itself while we remain unconscious. And so as we come to a conclusion, what we want to say is that the ego does not have the ability to separate fact from personal opinion. But that awareness that is the real you that sits behind, that watches the voice in the head, that watches the thinker, that has the ability to separate truth from fiction. It has the ability to separate truth from personal opinion. It can put things aside and say, this is the fact, and this is in the service of the ego. This is my anger, and this is how I feel about it. It can sit and watch the mind as it creates stories, as it gets angry, as it holds resentment. So next time you think of a person you don't like, instead of thinking in the head, as the voice in the head and how you feel about him, try and bring your awareness about, and then watch your mind as it thinks thoughts about the person, and see how you feel now. You will see that the real you is not resentful. It is the ego that is holding all that story. And that is because it needs that to stay alive. And the moment you realize that that's not the real you that has just possessed you, it dissolves. You don't see the point of holding that story anymore. In the days of Imam Khomeini, when he was alive, we are told that once he found out that in the parliament, in the Islamic parliament, there was disagreements amongst the people. He said to them something very simple but profound. He said, do you know Allah sent 124,000 prophets? If 124,000 prophets were in this parliament or this majlis, no two of them would disagree. Why is it that 124,000 would not disagree and you are not even 200 and you disagree? Because there is no ego. There is only truth. There is awareness. And in the same way, it doesn't matter whether our community is 50, 100, 500 or 5,000. As the level of people being possessed by ego drops, you will see unity, you will see love, you will see peace, you will see harmony, because there will be nothing being done in the service of the ego. And you can use that as a yardstick. And when we learn how to forgive, it is then and only then that we will find true happiness and true peace. And inshallah will be a step closer to awakening. So we pray to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala on this night to free us from all forms of negative suffering that are the causes that separate us from Him, or give us the illusion of being separate from Him, so that we, inshallah, before we die, may be experience true bliss and what it truly means to know the love of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And we pray for the success of our community. Rabbana taqabbal minna innaka antas sami'ul alim. Salawat ala Muhammad.